dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. That's the way I think of the conflict we're in globally. And few people understand it better and certainly have more expertise on matters involving intelligence and what we do about enemies of this country than our first guest. She is Claire Lopez, I'm very pleased to say, a colleague of mine at the Center for Security Policy, where she is our Vice President for Research and Analysis. She was a career operations officer in the Central Intelligence Agency and has become, since leaving government service, one of the country's preeminent authorities on so many of the threat axes of our day, including notably Iran and its capabilities, nuclear and otherwise, to threaten us. Claire, welcome. It's always good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks so much, Frank. Glad to be with you.
I don't know where to start, Claire. It's a target-rich environment, as they say. Maybe we could get underway by sort of visiting with you about a theme that I'm going to be talking about probably for quite some time in the future. But what are your thoughts on this rising chorus of very, very heightened concern about the so-called Islamic State in Iraq and the Sham, or the Islamic State, the Caliphate, whatever you want to call it? Is it warranted, on the one hand, in terms of the threat the group itself poses, and is it an accurate depiction of what we're up against?
Well, you know, you're right that it seems like it's all of a sudden that our national security leadership has suddenly woken up to the threat from this group. But as little or as short a time ago as only a few years, John Brennan, currently CIA director, was belittling and just believing that the idea of a caliphate was absurd, as he put it, and, quote, never going to happen. And now all of a sudden we have the top leadership of Joint Chiefs of Staff General Martin Dempsey and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. We've never seen anything like this, and it's panic stations. Well, I think we need to step back a moment and recall that it is the United States that was helping to arm and to fund some of the jihadist opposition among the rebel forces in Syria for quite some time now, at least 2 years.
Which would include ISIS?
Well, out of some of those rebel groups is where ISIS came from. Fighters, according to the Jordanian intelligence services, speaking to the media, fighters that were trained in Jordanian camps by United States Special Forces went on after that to become members of IS. So it's a little disingenuous now to be panicked all of a sudden. It's a real threat. I don't want to diminish that, but to all of a sudden be in a panic about groups that we help to fund and arm and train is a little confusing.
Yeah. But more to the point, Claire, and again, you've studied this extensively in your various incarnations, but notably in recent years. Are we accurately characterizing the enemy at the moment any more than we have heretofore when we hear the president and his senior subordinates talk, as they did, about al-Qaeda as being the threat? Is ISIS the full manifestation of what we're up against, or is there something broader that we better be focused on lest we persist in a failed policy?
Yeah, I know what you're getting at, Frank, and it's exactly right. Because the United States national security leadership does not recognize or name or acknowledge the actual enemy, which are the forces of Islamic Jihad and Sharia, they cannot distinguish among different groups which are constantly shifting allegiances and names in any case. And so when they named al-Qaeda as the one and only threat that we have to fight against, they were trying to minimize it and get a handle on it, perhaps, get their arms around it, and we can deal with this. But they didn't want to talk about the Islamic ideology and the Sharia that undergirds not just al-Qaeda, but now IS, of course, and all of these other jihadist organizations.
Not least the Muslim Brotherhood, of course. Which brings us to the story of the day, which is that an American involved in this global jihad with the unlikely name of Douglas MacArthur McCain was apparently killed on the battlefield in Syria, a reminder that there are foreign jihadists, including those carrying American passports, who are part of this enterprise at the moment. As a former career intelligence officer, Claire, how serious a threat do you believe those elements of the jihad in particular represent to us, especially if they have the facility to return here without any particular difficulty?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this really is a serious concern. And this young fellow, Douglas McCain, comes from San Diego, of all places. He winds up in Syria and apparently died fighting with IS. But the question that you've asked is one that really is of concern. And we have an estimate now from some officials that as many as several hundred, I don't think they really know, but maybe as many as 300 Americans are already over in that theater, Iraq or Syria, fighting with these forces. That's not even to count all the probably thousands that have gone from Western Europe who likewise carry passports that don't need visas to come and go, certainly from Europe, but also from the United States. Some countries are just beginning to wake up to this. Australia, for example, Prime Minister Tony Abbott has asserted that any Australian with a passport, Australian passport, who goes over to fight jihad will not be permitted back to Australia. The Netherlands as well, beginning to take even preemptive steps to seize the passports and to cancel the citizenship and the passports of those who declare their intent to go over to fight.
Claire, let me turn quickly to another element of this global jihad and ask you to drill down a little bit on it. I am struck by the fact that one of the wellsprings of this jihadist enterprise worldwide, both at the sort of religious mandate level and in terms of financial underwriting for it, has been the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, almost always described as an ally of the United States, but one that has at the very best been playing a double game. You had a piece that appeared at the center's website, securefreedom.org, recently concerning a warning that the Saudi King Abdullah issued recently about something called fitna. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, and how it bears on where the Saudis are and the nature of the threat that they, among others, pose to us.
Yes, well, I mean, as you say exactly, the Saudis play a double game, to say the least. But right now, with IS forces just about at their border, as well as threatening the border of Jordan, moving south and west out of Iraq, King Abdullah and others, I mean, other sheikhdoms in the Gulf area, are seriously concerned. They're seriously worried. Now, we've sold these various states gazillions of dollars worth of top-of-the-line equipment, military weaponry and equipment, and yet, part of the points that I made, among the points that I made in that article, are that while the Saudi king is appealing to fellow Muslims to come together to fight this terrible threat of the Islamic State and join forces, they're not actually doing so. We're not actually seeing them come together in any organized way in a military force to put their forces together and stand up against IS. He is concerned about fitna being intra-Islamic civil strife, which is really the basis of this conflict we're seeing right now, both in Syria and in Iraq. Shiites and Sunnis fighting each other. This goes back to the time of right after Muhammad's death, when they couldn't agree on the succession. It continues to this day. And at its foundation, that's what this is, and that's what he was talking about. But many of those sheikhdoms, governments over there, are seriously concerned at what they perceive as an American withdrawal of our projection of usual power and influence in the region, and they're no longer feeling secure in the American defense umbrella.
Yeah, and one other facet of it, of course, is that the part of the double game that's been so vexing, that they have been supporting these jihadists as long as they're waging jihad someplace else. Now, yes, that they see the chickens coming home to roost, are very concerned about it at home. Claire, we have to let you go. We're out of time, but thank you, as always, for your expertise and for your insights, the work you do at the Center for Security Policy and so many other places. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon.
Thank you.
Next up, Jim Hansen will give us his boots-on-the-ground perspective on these matters. More straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist, or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, I'm pleased to say, joined
by one of our regulars, Jim Hansen, the guy we turn to for a boots-on-the-ground perspective on a matter as important as the war for the free world. Jim is a man who has served in the U.S. Army Special Forces in a variety of capacities, including counterinsurgency, counter-narcotics, and counterterrorism missions, as a weapons sergeant with the 1st Army Special Operations and other units. He is currently with the Warrior Legacy Foundation and a very active blogger, I'm pleased to say, with Black5.net, a terrific outfit. Jim, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
Let's start with a piece that you penned at Black 5, Jim, entitled The Religion of Pieces. Play on words, obviously, but talk a little bit about your perception as a guy who's been at the pointy end of the spear with a lot of these outfits of this group calling itself the Islamic State and what, among other things, apparently something called Task Force Black is doing about them.
Well, that's about the best news I have heard in any of our interactions in the entire region, and I guess around the globe with the Islamists, is the fact that Task Force Black is a combined group of Army's Delta Force, Navy SEALs, Team 6, and British SAS that was operational during the Iraq War and just stacked all kinds of dead terrorists like cordwood across all of that area. They were just amazingly successful. Reflagging them and turning them loose on ISIL would be a brilliant move. I just hope they get a broad hunting license through Syria, through Iraq, through the whole region, pretty much anywhere they run up the black flag. We want Task Force Black in there taking these guys out. So this I got to give the president credit for if he cuts them loose. The Brits seem to be pretty pumped about it. So if this actually happens, this could really put a hurt on those guys.
We're talking with Jim Hansen, the former technical weapons sergeant in the United States Army Special Forces, the guy we turn to for our boots-on-the-ground perspective. And Jim, it sounds an awful lot like what you've described with Task Force Black is, boots on the ground, as the president has said, will not happen. What's up with that?
Are there any statements by President Obama that don't come with a built-in expiration date, Frank? I'm unaware of any. So, yeah, the truth changed. Every once in a while, even a blind squirrel finds a nut. So this seems to be a good one for him, and I'll give him credit. Like I said, if he cuts them loose and lets them bring the pain to the enemy, they will do it.
Jim Hansen, let me ask you, I've been touching base with a number of our favored interviewees on this very important question, it seems to me, of should we be focusing so narrowly on ISIS? For example, we've just had al-Qaeda, the Ansar al-Nusra Front in Syria, release an American. Does that mean that we no longer need to worry about al-Qaeda? Or for that matter, are we even properly understanding the nature of this adversary? Because it's not just one or the other of these franchises that's a problem. It's really a global jihad. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and you've been pointing this out for a while, as have I. Al-Qaeda was never a centralized terrorist organization with offices and a bureaucracy and all that. They do have a leadership. They do have people who take those roles and who do push things down and make calls. But more than anything, it's been a call to arms for Islamist extremists to basically conduct jihad, kill infidels, and wreak terror around the world. So what they call themselves is irrelevant. What they're doing and why they're doing it is relevant. And the quicker we get to the point where we stop worrying about decimating al-Qaeda's leadership and declaring victory and understand that it doesn't matter who they call themselves, and even if they like each other, if they're busy killing innocent people in the cause of Islamist terror, then they are the enemy of Western civilization, and we need to take them out. And, you know, that's something we need to dedicate ourselves to, and I feel that that's not, you know, not a big enough strength in our efforts.
Or even focus of them. And one of the reasons that you've suggested in another piece entitled America's JV Leadership, clearly a
a reference to the president's deprecation of ISIS only a few months ago as the JV team in Iraq. Jim, is that part of the problem here, the group that the president is surrounding himself with, and for that matter, perhaps the president himself, are just not up to the task?
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they absolutely positively are not good enough to be doing what they're doing. John Kerry, Chuck Hagel, you know, and then the president himself, all are fairly incompetent at best. The president is not dedicated to this. He never wanted to be a foreign policy president. He wanted to fix America and be the domestic policy guy. And so he's been drugged into this. And the more his inaction and incompetence has emboldened our enemy, the more he's been forced to kind of jump back into foreign policy. And he's done it in a piecemeal, I would say, you know, half-something way.
Hearted, I'm sure, is what you were thinking of, right?
Yeah, okay. The bottom line is he's done a horrible job, and our enemy has been emboldened. Our enemy has grown in strength. And they have a caliphate. They have a mini caliphate in the middle of one of the most important areas of the world. And unless we take that seriously, it's going to spread. And they are hell-bent on causing trouble, not just there, but back here again. And I think that's inevitable if we don't do something.
Yeah. And Jim, you've written, as have others, about, I think, a particularly troubling compounding factor, evidently, and that is that the president is seemingly extremely disengaged from all this. Some have suggested, Hugh Hewitt and Joe Scarborough had a conversation, I think, about it yesterday on Hugh's show, that, you know, the president's checked out. He's interested in being the ex-president, and he's got two more years in office. Now, maybe that could be, you know, satisfied if he were to resign and go on to be an ex-president, but that would leave us with Joe Biden, which isn't a happy prospect. But on the other hand, it might be the better course rather than, you know, pretend to be president and not conduct his offices properly for the remainder of his term in a very dangerous, indeed increasingly dangerous world. Jim, let me ask you, as a former Special Forces professional, to talk about one other piece of this, and that is the apparent deliberate disclosure by the Obama administration of the information about an effort by Special Forces personnel to try to get in and rescue this fellow who was subsequently beheaded, reporter James Foley.
Well, when will they not use the military to kind of increase their polling? First of all, they poll to see if they should take military action. Don't conduct military action until they absolutely have to, if ever. And then whenever they can get an ounce of PR juice out of it, they're right there claiming, I'm President Obama. I shot bin Laden in the eye, me and the SEALs. And they're doing the same thing here. Foley gets killed in a horrific way. ISIS wins a huge PR victory, makes Obama look impotent. And what does he do? He says, yeah, but I tried. You know, at least I did something. And so he discloses to them that we are conducting raids into their AO. And the next time, now that they've captured, you know, more surface air missiles and manned portable surface air missiles, what's going to happen the next time there's helicopters coming into a compound trying to save somebody or kill some bad guys? They may run into a coordinated ambush because, of course, now ISIS knows exactly what we're doing. It was disgraceful and unfortunately all too common with that group.
I fear you're right, Jim Henson, and I fear that the legacy in so many respects of this administration is going to be that of diminished military capabilities, as well as you've indicated, emboldened adversaries and a lot weaker friends and fewer of them. Jim, thank you for your insights. As always, we appreciate what you do at Black5.net and, of course, the Warrior Legacy Foundation. I know you'll keep it up and come back to us again very soon. Next up, we will be speaking with Diana West. We'll get her take on this ISIS business, the global jihad, and American betrayal in our time. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Aerial attacks launched from Egypt into Libya underscore yet again the abject failure of the Obama administration's policy in the Middle East. Nations relatively aligned with us now face alone the predictably awful results of America's involvement in the overthrow of a relatively friendly autocrat Muammar Gaddafi. Loose talk about an Arab Spring ushering in tolerant democracies has given way to the harsh reality of jihadist and sectarian mayhem. Presidential claims of putting al-Qaeda on the path to defeat are now seen for what they always were, national security fraud. And White House declarations that assorted wars have been unilaterally ended have been replaced by portentous decisions seemingly guided by public relations rather than strategic considerations. President Obama has emboldened our enemies, undermined our friends, and diminished our country. Some legacy. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back for our weekly visit with Diana West, a nationally syndicated columnist and best-selling author, a great friend and colleague, among others, a contributor to the Center's book, Sharia, The Threat to America. Diana West, good to have you with us as always. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
You, in connection with the book, Sharia, The Threat to America, have given, among other things, of course, given much thought to the nature of the enemy that we're confronting at the moment. I wonder what your thoughts are, Diana. We've been talking about it with guests throughout the program about this ISIS business. Suddenly, there seems to be a, well, growing determination to counter it. And that's probably a good thing. But I wonder whether we're properly understanding it as a manifestation of a larger problem. What are your thoughts on both the nature of the problem and the appropriateness of the seeming planned response?
Well, I think the planned response, if I could talk about that first, is another iteration of the same failed policies that we've been pursuing since 9/11. And what I mean by that is that ISIS is just a more almost grotesquely cartoonish manifestation of Sharia on the march, of the jihad, and divorcing it from the Islamic whole, as we have done with Al-Qaeda, as we do with the Palestinian groups, as we do with the KLA, going back to the Kosovo wars, as we do with all of these...
Taliban.
The Taliban.
The Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes, as these points of the spear of advancing, encroaching, metastasizing, expansionist Islam, we simply address a very topical symptom rather than looking at the general problem, the general systemic problem, and that is the desire to unify Muslims and whoever else is unfortunate enough to live under Islam into a caliphate, a worldwide organization governed by Sharia. And we know that this is not just a tiny band of extremists, as George Bush told us many years ago. We know that this represents the longings of large majorities of Islamic countries, of Islamic peoples. We can go back to Pew polling of some years ago that remains extremely hard and representative of these groups that tell us that as much as two-thirds, when you average in some of the most populous Islamic countries, Morocco, Egypt, Pakistan, Indonesia, two-thirds of these people express a desire for Sharia and a desire for the caliphate. These figures are more important, I argue, than even the violence and on the march that we see with ISIS. But if we are determined to see ISIS through sort of a pinhole and divorce it from the spread of Sharia, then we are simply degrading a threat, as the phrase goes, or simply throwing water on a flame, and it doesn't go away. It just goes down a little, perhaps, and comes back in your own backyard.
Diana West, why do you think it is that we persist in this failed policy approach of looking, as you say, through pinholes at these elements, if at all, for that matter?
Well, it's really the chronic tragedy of our time. These are themes that I've worked through in The Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. In many ways, it's The Death of the Grown-Up meets American Betrayal. Cowardice, insufficient desire to survive, pressures, caving into pressures of what we call political correctness, which is really encroaching Marxism. These are the symptoms of a failing civilization, a civilization that's so weak that it is being swept aside. Our institutions in Europe, in America, in Israel, our institutions are being degraded and swept aside by this moving, advancing Islamic juggernaut, whether it is done peaceably by people wearing suits and calling for changes in our laws and to accommodate the Sharia, or it is done by men waving bloody knives. It is the same threat, and we are not addressing it. We are losing to it.
You've alluded to your work on betrayal, specifically American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, your newest and most remarkable book, I think. We've had an historic anniversary recently, in the past week, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about it and kind of the insights that you draw from the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, as it was known, and the events that flowed from it for our own time.
Yes, well, of course, this was the historic pact, that non-aggression pact between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany in 1939, August 23rd, 1939, that essentially became the mechanism of World War II. We saw the invasion of Poland by Germany a couple of weeks later, and shortly after that, September 17th, we saw the invasion of Poland by the Soviet Union, which is something we don't generally think about when we think about the beginning of World War II, but it was a pincer move on Poland that began the war. That pact also included what is known as the Secret Protocol, which was a plan to divide the spoils of Europe, namely the peoples and nations of Europe, Central and Eastern Europe specifically, between Nazi Germany and Communist Russia. And this was not known to the world until after the war. Of course, we could see the results of this early on, but in terms of it being a plan, we did not see this until after the war, whereby at a point where Nazi Germany was no more, but the Soviet Union actually had moved into all of that territory, virtually all of the territory that had been described. So it was the Nazi-Soviet pact without the Nazis, basically, by the end of the war.
But all of this was obscured, of course, Diana West, because at a moment, Hitler turned on this partner in the dividing of Europe, went after the Soviet Union.
In 1941, yes. Mm-hmm.
But because of that betrayal on his part, the Soviets became our partners in the war, our allies, uncomfortable as that was on occasion. And your book is an extraordinary depiction of how that flipping by Stalin basically gave a get-out-of-jail-free card to the Soviets, and notably how this played out in the spectacle of the Nuremberg trials after World War II. Talk a little bit about that, and again, how does this bear upon our own time?
Yes, well, yes, exactly. Well, what's so amazing is that this thus began the history of betrayal, as I see it, in terms of the Western allies, the democracies, protecting Stalin, lying for Stalin, covering up for Stalin, enabling Stalin, ultimately colluding with Stalin, and in many crimes against humanity, namely at the end of World War II, for example, the repatriation of some millions of Soviet claimed nationals who had fled during the war or even before that to the West and were returned by America and Britain to the Gulag or death. At Nuremberg, the Soviet Union was guilty of the same war crimes as Nazi Germany was, particularly once we know about the secret protocol dividing Europe, this plan, this conspiracy to commit war, which was one of the accusations against the Nazi high command. And this evidence was suppressed by the Allies, by the British, by the Americans. Of course, the Soviets were actually actively seeking to suppress anything having to do with their relationship with Hitler at this trial. And so this became the model of what we know as international justice. Now, we look back on that, we are taught to look back on that as a marvelous moment in human history where the world comes together to judge the monster regime of Nazi Germany. And yet, who was sitting on the bench judging? The Soviet Union, guilty of so many of the same crimes, hand in glove with the Americans and the British, colluding by virtue of their silence in ignoring this, in, as you said earlier, giving them a get-out-of-jail-free card, which only set the stage for future collaboration, future silence, future cover-up.
And future aggression by the Russians, so let's be clear. Diana, there's so much more to plumb on this particular topic, and not least how we may be turning a blind eye to similar bad behavior and worse by putative allies at the moment. I'm thinking of Saudi Arabia as an example, or Qatar as an example, but we'll have to take that up on another occasion. I thank you so much, Diana, for your wonderful writings at your syndicated column and dianawest.net. Of course, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, two must-read books. Come back to us again next week, and we'll talk with you then. Next up, we will be speaking with Fred Flights. We'll get into what's going on with Russia and Ukraine at the moment, and more with him straight after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events. To let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at DailyCaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Joined once again, I'm very pleased to say, by another of the extraordinary talents we have at the Center for Security Policy, Senior Fellow Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional, now the senior analyst with the Langley Intelligence Group Network. You can follow Fred's work there at lignet.com, also at securefreedom.org, the center's website. Fred, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Frank.
Fred, as a very accomplished intelligence professional, I know you're covering a broad front. I'd like to divert from the conversations we've been having, though I know you know a lot about the subject as well, of ISIS, at least for a moment, to talk about Russia and Ukraine. There was a conversation, a summit of sorts, between the presidents of Ukraine and Russia and their counterparts from, I believe, Kazakhstan and Belarus. Do you see any sign, Fred, that Vladimir Putin is wavering in his determination to secure more territory for Russia in Ukraine, specifically, at least initially, in eastern Ukraine?
I don't see any signs of this at all, Frank. What I think is interesting is that I think Putin is taking advantage of the chaos in the Middle East, thinking it's diverting the world's attention while he makes more moves on Ukraine. There was a summit on Monday between the heads of state of Ukraine and Russia, Poroshenko and Putin. Just before the summit, video turned up, the Ukrainian government showed, of 10 Russian paratroopers were captured on Ukrainian territory. Now, the Russians said they happened to wander into Ukraine. It was an accident. Well, if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. Recently, convoys of so-called humanitarian aid has crossed the border from Russia, and there were reports early today tanks moved into eastern Ukraine in an area where there isn't fighting, possibly to seize territory, so there will be a road connection between Crimea and Russia. I don't think Putin's backing down at all.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, Fred. The beauty of these distractions, if you wish to call them that, in the Middle East, for not just the Russians, but the Chinese, among others, is that creates that much more latitude for them to act aggressively against even us, let alone some of our friends. Fred, speaking of friends, we have just learned that the Israelis and Hamas have established an open-ended ceasefire in the Gaza-Israeli conflict. Can any possible enduring peace be in prospect as long as Hamas is still in charge in Gaza? And particularly, Fred, again, as an intelligence professional, I just ask, do you think there's any possibility that the kind of materials that Israel previously set in, concrete and building materials and so on, will actually be used in a manner that doesn't result in more tunnels and the like for attacking Israel in the future?
As usual, the Palestinians have been impossible to negotiate with. They were offered a pretty good deal, which would not have required them to disarm by the Egyptians, and they rejected it. Hamas still wants the destruction of Israel, and it refused every reasonable ceasefire, and Israel's been at the table ready to talk. This latest ceasefire is an open-ended agreement to halt the fighting, and it is a result of Netanyahu's policy of quiet for quiet. Basically, he's going to continue to retaliate against any rocket attacks in Israel. And I think either Hamas has decided to regroup, and I don't think they're running out of missiles, but I suspect the Israelis were going to continue to fight them until they ran out of missiles. This isn't going to be an enduring peace. Hamas is going to regroup, and in another year, maybe 18 months, I think the rockets are fired again.
I fear you're right. And my concern is that in the interim, what has already happened to Israel and will probably continue to happen at an accelerating rate is its isolation, especially insofar as it seems that the United States is not standing as firmly with Israel as it has historically. Fred, let me turn to yet another topic with you. You have experienced life on Capitol Hill, notably as a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee. And I won't ask you about the merits of the climate change agenda of the Obama administration, because I think that's a little out of your area. But I would like to get your thoughts as an experienced Capitol Hill hand about an idea that the New York Times, among other outlets, is announcing for the Obama administration, that it's basically going to do an end run on the Congress, specifically the Senate's role in treaty making, to effect some kind of executive agreement with other nations regarding restrictions on things that produce carbon-emitting, you know, greenhouse gases. What is it that is almost certainly going to provoke on the part of those in Congress?
Well, it's going to infuriate Congress, and this president has been doing this routinely. He's been struck down by trying to make recess appointments, trying to go around Congress. when the Senate wasn't really in recess.
By the Supreme Court.
I mean, there's been a number of appointments and at lower levels that they've been struck down. I think this is going to lead to lawsuits from Congress because he's exploiting the prerogative of Congress, of the Senate, to ratify treaties. And it's going to significantly damage his already tattered relationship with the Senate, which could be a real issue if the Democrats lose the Senate this fall.
Well, and I suspect that this will further exacerbate the problems that a number of Democrats are having already with the president's policies on coal and the like in their difficult reelection bids in some of these coal-producing states. It'll be very interesting to watch. But I think you're absolutely right. This does fit a larger pattern, Frick Flights, of, extra-constitutional or anti-constitutional behavior by this president. And I hope that there will be some significant pushback on it. Fred, let me turn back to the Middle East with you. We've been discussing it with others in the course of the program, and I'd like to get your thoughts, maybe starting with ISIS. Specifically, your take on the gravity of the threat it represents, is it being overhyped, and are we being accurate in depicting it as the threat when it seems really but a piece of a larger global jihadist enterprise?
It is part of a larger global jihadist enterprise. I think that's a very important point. This is a terrorist army, which is a manifestation of effort by radical Islamists to spread Sharia worldwide. Now, I was on Stuart Varney's program this week, and they were asking me about homegrown terrorists in the UK and why are so many of them coming to the Middle East, and could we just cut off their passports and maybe benefits, would that be enough? But Frank, that's not enough. There's a serious issue by the radical Islamist movement to recruit radicals and radicalize these individuals worldwide. There may be up to 1,500 British citizens fighting for ISIS, 700 French, 800 Russians, and now we know there's several Americans. This requires a response where we stop tolerating radical Islam in these countries. There are cities in the UK where radical Islamists are taking over secular schools. They're tolerating clerics who are advancing al-Qaeda ideology. It's a much bigger problem.
It is. It is, in fact, the ideology of Sharia, I believe. Fred, speaking of these jihadists, the government of Egypt, apparently in league with several others, I believe the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, took action against some in Libya. The aftermath, the detritus, if you will, of the failed American intervention there to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi. Just very quickly, Fred, what do you make of that attack, and what does it portend, do you think?
It was a remarkable attack that some of our allies were taking this action to try to support the government in Libya, and it simply shows how the West is just simply so fatigued by Iraq and Afghanistan that it's not willing to help in situations like that.
Yeah, and that the situations are unfortunately continuing to metastasize. Fred, much more to talk about. We will do so in the near future. In the meantime, thank you for the work you do at Lignet.com, also with the Center for Security Policy at Fox News and elsewhere. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.